Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to The Guinea Pig. I'm Dr. Mariam Zamani, an oculoplastic surgeon and aesthetic doctor.
And I'm Fiona Golfer, a writer and journalist. I'm no stranger to a cosmetic procedure, and I'm willing to try pretty much anything.
Which is why I'm here, to make sure Fiona and anyone else that's out there considering a treatment to help make a better informed decision safely and to try and collect as much information as they can.
Every fortnight, this podcast comes to you from Mariam's clinic in Chelsea. If you're looking for an honest, no-holds-barred approach to invasive and non-invasive cosmetic surgery,
then the Guinea Pig is here to help you. Hi, we're back in the clinic with another episode of The Guinea Pig. How are you doing, Fee?
Hi, Mariam. Well, I'm fine, except for, as you know, I've been afflicted this week. I've had a rather large spot. Actually, a large spot is too kind a word for it. I've had a sort of second head grow on my face. And obviously, you got the panicked phone call. It was the day before I was going to something where I needed to look my best. It's always the day before you need to look your best, as far as I can tell.
Of course.
So I thought it was a good time for us to talk about spotty issues. I called you and then I sent you a picture of the second head, which was not a spot in the classical sense because it didn't have a head. It was just this enormous,
a little bit like a cyst. You basically had an irritation or a cyst beneath the skin surface. And in that situation, I decided to help you by injecting a little bit of intralesional steroid injection. So basically that's putting a little bit of steroid, which is an anti-inflammatory, into the cyst, draining some of that fluid out, and then helping the inflammation go down very quickly to make it lower. It doesn't help the redness so much, but it just helps to flatten a pimple or a cyst out. It also has some potential negative side effects, but in the low dose that I use,
there's always a potential negative side effect with you, Mariam.
I know. I always have to say that because there is always the good and the bad that come together. And, you know, obviously the good usually outweighs the bad, and that's why we all do these sorts of things. But it does take a balance. So I did a small injection in your little cyst. It helped a little. It didn't help a lot. I could have put more, but, you know, again, a lot of these
that's
go down
you,
on there.
You that are is, on the side of caution.
I know. It's to a fault, I know.
I mean, I want to say it was a motherfucker of a spot. And this little motherfucker wasn't going anywhere. So I you did zap it for me the other day. You injected it and I could cover it because it wasn't hugely raised, but I thought it was maybe all the filler in my body that had kind of gathered
into one escape. Little yeah. point, a little volcano yeah. of
yeah. Let me out. It was my
yeah, but you know, a lot of times women have these little bit of cystic acne on their chin, and unfortunately you think that once you've left puberty that acne is over, but actually there are many episodes in one's life that acne recurs in their 20s. You can have adult acne, never have had acne in your teenage years or your youth, and then all of a sudden you're in your 20s and you have acne. Or you can have a pregnancy and you have acne. You can have post-pregnancy acne.
So it's a hormonal response.
Yes, you can have, you know, monthly issues with, you know, just your own menstrual cycle. You can have it when you're perimenopausal, postmenopausal. I mean, basically at any point.
Mine felt like it was stress. I've got a house full of builders, and there's nothing more stressful in the world than having builders. And I got this spot, but I also got unbelievably bad mouth ulcers all of last week. And I was thinking that maybe everything was connected, because I thought it was definitely a message going on there.
But usually spots are unfortunately not so much. I think the one of the big issues with acne in general, although, you know, one spot is not necessarily considered acne, but anything that appears on your face or your body, because it you think it's a reflection of yourself and how you maintain yourself, people are very self-conscious, and it goes really deeper than just, oh, I, you know, you might not think that with a gray hair. You have a gray hair, yeah. No big deal. Same sort of thing. It's a blemish, but it's not anything that you're doing most of the time. So yes, this is a huge subject and one that we could spend hours talking about, but we thought we'd invite Dr. Justine Hexall to the clinic. She is a consultant dermatologist, and she will go through some of the basics of acne, and she will be with us in just a few moments.
I can't wait. Hi, Justine, and welcome to the Guinea Pig.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Now, you used to work for Avène, a skincare brand, before?
Yes, I'm an NHS consultant dermatologist and have been for 14 years. I also have my own clinic in Sussex where I do all sorts of dermatology, you know, acne, psoriasis, skin cancer, and also some aesthetic dermatology as well. I've worked with different brands independently, really, giving advice and,
So many things to talk about today.
Today we're going to talk about all things acne, which is just such a big topic that affects men, women, teenagers, adults, and at every stage of life. So
it's funny because spots are such a sort of non-word to use. When I worked at Vogue, and if we wrote about skin or beauty, we didn't write about spots. We could write about blemishes.
Why is that?
I don't know. It was sort of like as if a spot was too ugly a thing to describe, maybe. But I know that it was. They were described as skin blemishes and not as, you know, nasty pustulating.
So already.
I think a blemish just puts it into a big category of all things that are not perfect. Whereas if you say a spot, you know, I think of a blemish, you know, if I have, you know, like a little red blood vessel showing or a little bit of pigmentation or anything that's, you know, uneven with the skin. But I'd call a pimple a blemish too, but not really. It's easier to describe an acne spot as a spot.
I think of a blemish as being something quite sort of benign, and just a little blemish, it sounds very temporary, whereas maybe a spot sounds a bit more permanent, like it's moved in, you know.
Yes, but there are different kinds of spots.
There are different types of spots, absolutely.
So on the face, what are the most common spots that we encounter?
So on the face, and that's an important point, because not everything is acne. So people come to see me in clinic with their acne, which they've been using quite strong acne treatments for, and they've got rosacea. So it's understandably getting worse. So it's kind of like differentiating your different spots. So it might be a rosacea spot, as you say, it could be a little blood vessel. It could be an acne spot. It could be a pustule, or it could be a closed, what we call a closed comedema, a white head or a black head. So many different forms of spot, I suppose. So it's quite an umbrella term.
There must be so many different ways of treating. So for a teenager who's got a face covered in blackheads,
yes.
Before we even get to the acne that might follow, I suppose maybe the squeezing of those blackheads. I mean, yes. Can you give yourself acne?
You can certainly give yourself more sort of inflammatory or sort of deeper lesions if you start squeezing. I think the main problem when teenagers start getting acne, I think this is a time to get in there. And quite often if I'm in clinic and I'm seeing a teenager with something else and I spot they've got quite early acne, I do often say, should we have a little chat about your skin too? Because I think if you can get in at that very early stage, the sort of micro comedonal stage, or the sort of where you've got sort of blackheads or whiteheads, you can probably halt the progress a little bit. But what happens is, and I have teenage children, so I know what happens, they go onto sort of certain channels and start using every single treatment available. So they have a 10-point skincare regime. They start waxing and sort of, you know, sort of you are using face masks and really strong astringent washes, and it's all strip, strip, strip. So immediately, if someone's got inflamed skin, and acne is an inflammatory skin process, the worst worst thing you can do is start making it more inflamed. So over cleansing it with strong astringent, like alcohol based, very soapy products, which are going to change the natural acidic pH of the skin, is going to make it dry and irritated and actually make the situation worse. So getting in early and using a very gentle or sort of much more sort of, I suppose, intelligent skincare regime is a good idea.
Intelligent skincare, I think, is always the most important. I think people, as you said, are misguided. There are so many claimed experts. They're not experts in what they're claiming to be. They have their own scenario, and then all of a sudden, a few people follow them and they've become the guru in, you know, skincare or what's important in skincare. And I think for what I see, I sometimes treat people from that have acne scarring or pigmentary remnants from previous acne. And I see how actually long after the spot is gone, they're still having the ramifications of the process that happened there before. And I think that leaves a great impact on them in terms
psychologically,
yes. In terms of confidence.
Sure.
And I guess it's something more than confidence. It can shape their personality if it happens at such a young age. And I always think that, you know, spot versus blemish, the one negative thing that I seem to think is that people are always like, oh, it's the food you eat, or,
yeah.
You know, so they don't think of it as it's a medical problem that has a root cause to it that can be exacerbated by certain things, but
yes.
Most of which is not in their own control. And I think that sometimes that's, you know, that can be very traumatizing.
Can we myth bust? Let's start with
what causes
our
acne?
Teenage kids, what's going to... That's obviously a hormonal thing that starts.
Absolutely, which is a really good point, because I'm often asked about hormonal acne. Well, by definition, acne is controlled by hormones, so it's all hormonal.
Yeah.
So when you're a teenager, you have a change in your hormones. They drive up the oil in your skin, the sort of skin cells which block the pores, and then you get this inflammatory skin condition, acne vulgaris. So yes, it is hormonally based.
So on my teenage daughter, she didn't have acne, but she had spots on her face. But my son has what I think is probably acne on his back. So is that a more common boy-girl thing?
So that's really interesting. So you said she hasn't got acne, but she has spots on her face.
Occasionally. She doesn't have what
so
my
still
son
has, acne.
Has. Yes, okay, so it's acne. Sorry, split the hair.
So she has, as you say, mild acne, but your son may have. But you see, that's interesting as well. So when I see teenage boys with acne on their back, then it might be acne. But we have to remember that if you're going to the gym and you're sweating a lot and you're in a sort of got warm sort of maybe not a cotton top on, then you might have a yeast infection causing a sort of folliculitis, or it could be other bugs. It's not necessarily, again, acne. So it's very important, back to your point, Mary, that we know that the people that see you, that's what they're used to seeing, because they're always what we call differential diagnoses.
Exactly. I think that word spot is too broad a term to describe everything that's possible, and that's why it's so important to seek expert opinions and not just self-diagnose, because sometimes they do look very similar, and it's the trained eye that knows the difference between, you know, an acne vulgaris spot versus a rosacea spot or a folliculitis or, you know, something else that might be on that differential.
Yes, definitely.
Can we misbust the food?
Okay, so I think the association between food and acne is still in evolution. I think there's still studies going on, but I don't think it's an entire myth, in that I think if you have lots of sugary sort of foods, you get a spike in insulin, which can be pro-androgen, so pro or sort of testosterone type drugs and hormones, which cause oil. So I think there is an association. There's some studies that suggest possibly semi-skimmed milk, because the process of going from full fat to semi-skimmed might increase of androgens. But I think the important point is, it worries me when someone comes into my clinic who has stopped all food groups because they have acne, and as you say, that's not a good thing, and that they're missing out on really important nutrition. So I think before people ban all food groups, they need to really think about their diet, and a healthy varied diet is incredibly important.
So all of these sort of oat milk, almond milk, soy milk,
non-dairy milks.
Non-dairy milks.
So, you know,
you're shaking your head and
no, I mean, I there's no strong sort of research surrounding that. As I said, there's some tentative association possibly with lower fat milks, but I think that further evidence is needed around food and acne. But on the whole, and I think you touched on the point, it isn't to blame the person has acne because they're not washing, because they're having a poor diet. Usually it is purely down to hormones, but you can help yourself with healthy diet things, you know, eating foods which are good for your skin, that's going to help. But I think
definitely with my son, I see when he cuts out sugar, and he has a real passion for sugar. But when he cuts out the sugar, the acne gets better, and when he's exposes his skin a little bit to the light,
yes,
I tell him to change his sheets very regularly, because I know that you shed so much, and that a lot of young people, when they first move out of home, it sounds silly, but they don't change their sheets as often as they do probably their parents, and so they don't realize they're shedding, they're putting their hair gel, they're putting all the waxes they use. And is it a myth that there's so much kind of junk that comes off on your bed sheets?
Yes,
you're moving it around your body.
Yes, I suppose so. I'm not.
I had it the other day. I thought it was a very good point.
Yes,
that we lose.
Well, you
so
spend
much
a lot of time in your bed, so it's
bed.
True.
So
what you spend about 8 hours,
clean your sheets clean. It's very important,
no,
especially for kind of hormonal kids.
Yeah, no, I think
let alone for us.
Yes, keeping. Oldies. But also, it's interesting, you talk about sugary foods, and I quite often see patients of mine whose acne is clear, they go to university and within 2 months they're back to see me because their sleep patterns change. They're not having as good a diet, they're probably having more sort of sugary foods. They're stressed, you know, lack of sleep, you know, stress, etc. We know that associates inflammatory skin conditions. So, and when we're tired and stressed, we probably eat more sugary foods. It's a bit of a cycle as well.
It's a catch-22. You can become stressed because you have acne, and then therefore create a self-perpetuating cycle, which is really horrible.
Yeah.
So in terms of,
you'll be using retinol all the time, and just what about the sort of retinol busting?
Yeah, so I think that there's been quite a lot of shift in how we manage acne. It's accepted much more now that it used to all be about P. acnes or the acne bacterium, but now it's we're focusing much more on that early inflammation. So inflammation is there at the beginning of acne quite often, rather than sort of later on in acne. And it's important to reduce that inflammation for lots of reasons, not least.
When you say inflammation, just for our listener, what do you mean? Like, what would they see when they see when you speak of the inflammation?
So if you see inflamed skin, it's red, it's, you know, it's irritated, it's sort of inflamed skins, and you obviously have that, you know, so you see that clinically, but it's also happening at a sort of a subclinical level as well. So retinoids are very good at reducing inflammation. I think that in the past we have been far too reliant on antibiotics, probably more because for their anti-inflammatory effects rather than their antibacterial effects. And I think that whilst antibiotics are still used in acne, they should be used for a short period. There's not a lot of evidence for using much beyond 3 to 4 months. And focusing on topical treatments, I think, is important. So I go to a retinoid. You know, that's the first port of call for me quite often.
Can you buy it over the counter, retinol?
You can get some weaker retinols, but if you want to have an acne-based sort of retinol, they're really prescribed. Yeah, your adapalene, sort of 0.1%, 0.3% will be prescribed. But I think retinoids are underutilized, and I think antibiotics are overused in acne.
And what age would you start acne treatment?
When they've got the acne, you know. So I see some patients at 10 who've started to get sort of acne. Yeah, absolutely, yes. So the key for me is to start the treatments, topical treatments, effective topical treatments early on. When you use retinoids, they're very hard to use. People, you know, if you're given a tube of retinoid and told, you know, good luck, you'll be back because you'll put
it
on your face.
Use it. Your face will peel off. Yeah. You'll be red. You'll be inflamed. You'll say, oh my God, I hate this doctor who gave it to me.
I'm allergic.
Exactly. And then you'll throw it in the bin and then not use it and say, my acne hasn't changed, or for whatever reason that you're using
it for. So you have to use it in a very precise way?
Slowly. So you introduce it slowly, and you make sure whilst you're using it that you've got a really gentle skincare regime. So the first thing I do is stop all the paint strippers, you know, and say we're going to use a very gentle wash. It sounds counterintuitive, but you have an inflammatory skin condition and we need to keep your skin barrier as healthy and calm as possible. And then we'll introduce the retinoid, but I recommend a moisturiser half an hour afterwards. Don't use it every day. Introduce it maybe twice a week at first and build up to it.
So what would you recommend as to our listener as a as a gentle skin wash.
So I like Cetaphil. There is the Efflaclar range, which are specific for acne, La Roche-Posay.
Is this available sort of on the high street?
Yes, in Boots. You can use Avène, have your gentle skin washes. So all of these products, you know, just using a gentle skin wash is a good idea, because you're using a very strong topical treatment, and even the most robust skin will start to feel irritated. And finding a moisturiser, that's another myth. If you put a moisturiser on the skin, you're going to get more
greasy
spots.
Absolutely.
Of course, if you put a heavy oil-based or greasy petroleum-based moisturiser onto skin, yes, that may be what we call comedogenic or pro-acne. But a lot of moisturising lotions will calm and hydrate the skin and won't exacerbate the acne. And it will mean that you will tolerate a very effective treatment in a retinoid.
So what do you give as their guideline in terms of when to have something more than a retinoid? So do you just start the retinoid initially and then add more as you go along, or...
Yes, so for example, I tend to give a combination of a retinoid with benzoyl peroxide. I think benzoyl peroxide is very useful because it helps against antibiotic resistance. And so I will tend to combine the two. So benzoyl peroxide breaks down those little sort of whiteheads, etc., with your retinoid. But again, it's quite a strong combination. So,
these are all things that you... These are prescribed?
These are prescribed. Okay. These are active treatments for acne that you will get from your doctor, really. It should be one of your first line treatments.
And then what's your second line? If that's not enough, they come back in a few months. And how long should you give? I always think that's an important point, because sometimes people think there's a miracle cure that, you know, you use it for a couple of days a week and your, you know, my acne or whatever the blemish is on the skin will go away. And I find that we don't have enough education amongst the general public to be able to say, no, you actually have to give it, you know, a few weeks, you know, in order to be
also
able to...
Also, teenagers, not the most patient.
No, they're not patient.
So whenever I've tried to get mine to use something, I know that they sort of, there's a burst of, oh, mum, can I go to the doctor and get something? And then there's a tube lying around abandoned, and they're, you know, they're teenagers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're so right. That's a really good point, because quite often by the time someone comes to see me, they will tell me that they have, all treatments have failed. But when you take a history, all treatments have been abandoned or lost.
There's a difference.
There's a difference.
My diet.
Yes, that's right. So that's important. Compliance is incredibly important. And the point I would make that if you do use a really good skincare regime, which is going to be very calming and hydrating, etc., to the skin, and will accompany a retinoid well, your compliance will be much greater.
Do you find it's harder to get boys to comply than girls? There's something about boys, you know, persuading them to use a good moisturiser, or that still I feel easier to kind of get my daughter to understand.
I think that's
the
changing.
Benefit of using it. It is changing, but honestly, if you left it out in my house, I know that she would probably, even though he's going to kill me for saying this on the podcast, but even though I'd say my son's acne is definitely more extreme than anything my daughter's ever got, I can get her onto skincare regimes easily.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's on his back. He can't see it. He's probably quite busy with his life.
Well, the girls that he likes can see it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not as evident as something that someone, when you speak to them, you see their face at the first port of...
It's not, but it's
still there.
It's big. Actually, I wanted to ask you about scarring, because I saw a friend of mine this morning who's obviously in her youth had bad acne, and her face was full of acne scars. And I said, why don't you get those filled, or surely there's a way of smoothing out acne scars, which I was surprised that she hadn't. But can one, as it were, I know that you talk about how you filled an old,
I had a chicken pox scar.
She's got lots and lots and lots of what I call like perforations. that I see acne perforations. Can those be filled?
Yes. So there are different stages of acne. Yeah. So there's mild, moderate, severe. There's just macules, papules, pustules.
Yeah.
Cysts, song
you know, there's a lot of different ways to describe acne,
which
I think we should go through. But the inflammatory process of acne can, in its footsteps, basically leave these depressions or scars. And there's different kinds of scars that can result from acne. And some of those scars can be treated topically after the acne is under control or has gone away. So I do treat some of those post-acne patients with different lasers, either fully ablative or fractionally ablative lasers to help with the depression and help improve collagen and skin production. There can be subcision where you use a needle to glide beneath the scar to help lift the scar and tether those strands that are holding it down. Sometimes I do that in combination with filler, like a hyaluronic acid-based filler that helps then lift and fill that scar. Sometimes I feel that once you've even done that one or two times, the scar doesn't necessarily even come back the same way that it did before. So it can be more of a long-term sort of treatment. There's hyperpigmentation that can happen in people who have color in their skin. So I think, why don't we go through like the types of acne and whether it's just an open blackhead, a whitehead, whether it's a cyst, we can kind of discuss how those can each be treated.
That's right, because it's important to differentiate between your whiteheads or your closed comedomes, your comedomal acne, so blackheads, whiteheads, with more sort of pustules or cysts, because the treatment will be different to a degree. So, for example, if someone comes to see me with very severe sort of cystic acne, I'm not going to sort of immediately say, well, I think what we'll do is we'll treat with topical treatments, because you want to be careful about scarring. And what I would say, though, interestingly, is we always assume that the very severe acne causes, you know, the most scarring, but actually moderate acne, if you look at studies, show that can cause significant scarring. So we mustn't dismiss sort of what we consider to be mild to moderate acne. So if someone comes to see me with very early, sort of maybe what we call microcomedomal acne,
little bumps under the skin,
then I probably would just suggest the right skincare regime. You touched earlier on maybe hair oils and things, little things like, you know, someone's got a fringe and they're using lots of products that can cause a sort of acne of the forehead area. And then a topical treatment, which they'll stick to, and that can make a real difference. If someone comes to you with moderately severe acne, again, I will still consider using topical retinoids. I might do different things. So I might give a retinoid, but then I might consider combining that with some light peels, some light treatment to try and sort of calm down some of the inflammation. So physical therapies as well as topical therapies can work well. Just one caveat there, if I am giving retinoids, I'm very careful about light sensitivity. So you have to be careful if you're going to start lasering patients, that there's a gap between the retinoid and using a laser, for example. They are compatible with LED light. I think that's sometimes underutilized. I often use a bit of LED, maybe with a light mandelic peel, and that in combination with retinoids can work really well.
I personally love mandelic acid peels because as its base, it also helps with inflammation.
Yeah.
Not only that, but pigmentation too.
Exactly.
So I have very few breakouts, but once in a blue moon, I get something on my chin, as I have today, incidentally, and I'm treating with this.
We got one
funny,
together.
Yes, we did.
It's like getting your period together when you're at school, I feel. There's a symbiosis going on here.
The problem is obviously most important, which is do as I say, not as I do. Don't touch anything, because the minute, you know, you touch something and you create more inflammation, you're more likely to have post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation, or for layman's term, just a dark spot that doesn't go away for months at a time. And that's always a lot harder to get rid of than the pimple might have been to begin with.
Do you use azelaic acid for pigmentation?
I love azelaic acid.
What is it?
It's an anti-inflammatory topical treatment, really. It reduces inflammation. And we might use it, for example, in rosacea.
You use it for rosacea.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, it's something that would be prescribed.
It will be prescribed.
But you can find it in topical washes too, for instance. So my cleanser, just as a side note, my cleanser has a mix of azelaic acid and lactic acid as well, just with different kinds of acids, but it helps in terms of creating a more brighter complexion.
So just as a sort of idiot question here that I'm popping into the middle, because I am the idiot in the group, but, and I know it's such an idiot question, but
There's no bad question.
How important is it? Because I don't really wash my face at night. There we are, the big giveaway. I don't, I know. And I just kind of fall into bed and I think, because I don't really wear foundation and I don't really wear makeup on my face. And so I can go out and I wake up and I wash my face in the shower in the morning. And that's where I do my face wash. I
have but
my
you go outside, wash. You're in pollution.
Yeah,
you live in London.
Yeah.
Car exhaust.
I know. I mean, I'm a bad person. I know.
How you're not a bad person.
But I know many like me. You know, there are my kind, we are around. And so, but I would tell my children, obviously, the opposite to all of my rules, which is, do I wash my face twice a day? Should I be cleansing twice a day? Would I be overstimulating my skin if I did?
Well, and I think that's a really good point. So probably your skin barrier is quite
healthy. Don't judge me out there.
No, sometimes if you're, you know, people over cleanse. Mm. And so the quick question I always ask in clinic is, does your skin feel tight after washing? And if they say yes, then we know they've probably changed the naturally acidic pH of their skin. They're losing water, what we call transepidermal water loss. So, and then they're reaching for their moisturizer to compensate for that bad cleansing regime. So on the one hand, a positive is you're probably not overstripping your skin. On the other hand, which Maren picked up on, absolutely, is there's so much pollution left in the skin will eventually upregulate inflammation and, fortunately, enzymes which break down your collagen. So you really need to try and get that. You need to make sure.
Did you say premature aging?
I did. I knew that would get you
such a bitch. So that's right. So it leads to a lack of collagen, and also studies show pigmentation as well on the skin. So it's really important that that is removed from the skin. The other thing I would say, it's a mass opportunity at night to sort of put products onto your face because you're in bed, and it's a time of regeneration of the skin. So that's your time to put your antioxidants on.
I blame my grandmother. Circadian honestly, rhythm. My grandmother used to say to me, "Just don't touch your skin. Don't touch your skin. The less you pull it around." And I'm not saying she was right. But it's such kind of old wives, you know, you remember these awful things.
And it's so right in so many ways. Yes. You know,
take your eye makeup off outwards, always pull your skin inwards towards your nose so that you don't create lines.
There have been some pilot studies and they're looking at skin barrier and looking at children and not overwashing children and keeping their skin very healthy. So there's so much about that which is true. But the problem is walking from the tube to your work, etc., you are exposed, unfortunately, increasingly to pollution. That's
so the problem. Should one, in essence, be getting one's 6-7-year-old to have a sort of cleansing regime, if you like?
The danger of that is they will start using your expensive cleansers.
Well, no,
that's what's happened to me.
All of those kinds of, when my kids were little, there was this sort of rush of, I can't remember what the names were now, but there was this sort of very natural products that everybody was using to clean their children's face with, and it was the beginning of that kind of child cleansing. I think you were talking about you use SPFs on your children from very young.
And I do.
So, but when I was a child, you didn't touch your face until you were about 14.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like soap and water. That was the culture.
Our skin is not suited to detergents on our face. I had a patient once who had the most awful rosacea, and it was terrible. I think I was the fifth dermatologist. I really was the last chance saloon. And it was terrible, his rosacea, and he seemed to have most treatments. And we were talking about, you know, really strong drugs to treat his rosacea. And then I took a history, and he was a mechanic, and he was using Terps to wash his face. So we stopped that. And everything went away.
Imagine that.
Our skin's not suited to strong things like washing up liquids, you know, sort of soaps, etc.
That's up there with making babies through your tummy button, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So a nice gentle cleanse in the bathroom they can all use is probably a good idea. But I think cleaning your face, particularly if you're living in a city, is probably quite important. But I do think that we tend to use bathing as a punctuation now. So people use it to wind children down and put them in a soapy bath. It's not a great idea. So
if I've got my child, my 5-6-year-old child, in a bath, what am I cleaning their face with?
Mechanically, just, you know, flannel to wash their face is probably enough, or a gentle cleanser, but certainly not sort of getting them to pick up the soap and start scrubbing their very delicate 5-year-old sort of skin.
I wanted to ask you that idiot question. So when I got my third head the other day, or my second head on the side, which just didn't want to go away, it didn't really respond to the injection, it didn't really respond to the pad, just took its time and ruined my week. But as I was having this spot, I was also having kind of a real outbreak of mouth ulcers, which I do get from time to time. Is there any correlation? Is a mouth ulcer a sort of spot of the mouth, as it were?
And no, a mouth ulcer can indicate so many things. So it could be that you're run down, you may have had a low-grade viral infection, etc. When you're run down, you know, it stresses the body, and we know that stress can be associated with skin issues. So I suspect it's just a marker of where you were. Maybe you had some low-grade virus, etc.
No, I felt, you know, I was tired, yeah. And I was stressed, and yeah. Definitely I had the I had the ulcers and I had the thing. And I want to ask you another very glamorous question. Yeah. I want to ask you, I always ask the glamorous questions, don't I? Spotty bottoms. Okay. I'm obsessed by spotty bottoms. And why is it so hard to get rid of a spotty bottom? And is it a different kind of spot? Because to me, the spotty bottoms that I know of, you know, a spot comes and then it just stays there. It's just not going anywhere. It's not a spot with a head. It's just, what is the spotty bottom?
Okay, so again, it could be many things. It could be a folliculitis, where you've got inflammation of the follicles. It could be a skin bug, which is causing infection and causing multiple little sort of spots on the bottom. It could be more of a cystic lesion. You know, sometimes when people have sort of cysts around the bottom area, maybe the groin, we call that hidradenitis suppurativa, and that's a with scarring. It could be just a boil, you know, a staphylococcal sort
is
of
it,
boil.
Can I ask, just dispel a couple of old wives myths? Is it to do with how we dry ourselves? Is it to do with proper drying and or, well, you know, sweatiness?
Yeah.
And
so again, going back to my sort of gym
theory.
Sorry
for the glamour.
That's all right. So if you've got sort of, we've all got skin bugs on us, but if you're going to the gym, you're sweating, etc., you're being amongst gym equipment where other people have been probably sort of spreading some of their sort of germs, then you are at risk of probably getting a folliculitis or infection in the follicles.
And would something like dry brushing help that? Or?
Well, then you're touching on something else called keratosis pilosis. Pilaris is a term, and this is where you get sort of skin
bumps.
Little bumps, and you can get bumps on the thighs, the upper arms, the bottom area, and they can become sort of inflamed and look like sort of spots. So you could have so a bit of maybe some dry brushing or things that can help to unblock some of those follicles would help you. Occasionally I do see what we call a Pseudomonas infection in people's sort of bottoms or other areas of their skin when they go into hot tubs. So I tend to get a little run from a gym sometimes, so I feel like phoning the gym and saying, you know, hi.
I've been watching you.
Exactly. Can I have free membership the next 5 years? Unless I won't say anything. But I think sometimes, you know, you've got to be careful with things like hot tubs.
Would that work as well in, say, public pool?
It tends to be more in that sort of environment of a sort of,
where
you know,
more heat.
Public pools are just full. They're just one big sort of chlorine, aren't they? Sort of. I don't think anything would live in there, really, which is lucky because I see what children do in there. But but it tends to be that warm sort of environment. So people at home need to be careful making sure their hot tubs are clean, etc.
Okay, that's really interesting. Yeah. How about the toothpaste overnight?
I do occasionally do it, and then and my husband says, but aren't you a dermatologist? And I can't really answer why I'm doing it, but because I did it at 15, I think, well, it kind of worked at 15, and so I do it quietly.
And you also said that you like Pseudo.
Yeah, Pseudo creme's a really good barrier cream, so
it works sometimes for a baby. Why would it work?
If I have like a sort of a slight bit of inflammation or eczema around my lip, I might put a bit of Pseudocreme on. I do think it's interesting. I think being a dermatologist, I know I'm so prone to eczema, to rosacea, but I don't have them because I know exactly what to do the minute something comes. It does make a difference.
Just because you're here and it's free. Last week, while I had my second head, I also had this thing that happened on the bottom of my lip here, which feels like very flaky, little patch of dry skin.
Yes.
I've been scratching it.
Yes.
It's irritated.
Yes.
It was sort of sore and flaky. What is that? It's not the first time I've had that.
Okay. So if it feels sort of itchy and irritated and you keep licking it to try and sort of settle it down, then that might be what we call lick eczema. So you get, and that often comes at moments of real stress. So you have a moment of stress. I can feel it myself. I've had a meeting and I'm finding it slightly stressful. I feel tingling, which is so interesting, isn't it? How that stress immediately translates into the immunology of your skin, really. So the key there is to use something to reduce that inflammation and to also protect the skin barrier, because if you keep licking it, it'll make it worse. So I use a Lipikar stick. So Lipikar, it's a Lipikar AB balm stick, which helps to reduce the inflammation, or just a bit of Vaseline, a waxy sort of moisturizer to protect the skin barrier.
Always something in for fee.
Well,
a bit of steroid.
Because it started,
it all
my
happened simultaneously.
The bottom of my lip started to just sort of felt swollen and a bit sort of unhappy, and I thought maybe it was to do, as we talked about, you know, hyaluronic acid in the lips recently as a reaction. I thought, well, my lips. And then there was just this flakiness started. I have had a house of full of builders for the last few months. I hate all of them.
Yeah.
And I have broken out. You know, I think my skin's been full of dust and horribleness.
And
I've had this
it.
Spot. I'm not. I've washed it more, so I have to say. But then I had this weird feeling, which feels like dry skin peeling off the bottom of my skin.
So, and it could be an eczema, but it could be a bit of sun damage. Sometimes we get them around the lip area, what we call an actinic keratosis. It's a little sunspot, which can be a sign that's a slight bit of sun damage. So that would be my main differential diagnosis.
Okay.
Without my glasses on.
Okay. Yeah. Can't wait for you to put them on. Fascinating.
I think a lot of people worry about going to a doctor when it's not such a big deal. I always think it's always better to be on the side of caution for these things and to go a little bit earlier. Like you said, you can control a lot of things if you catch it early. So what are your three sort of takeaway points from acne? When to come in to see the doctor, and if they think that they might have some sort of acne, what would be the easiest, you know, three steps that they could take to try and
before they have to knock on your door?
Before they should come in and say, you know what, I need a little bit more help.
Yes. So my first step would be to be very careful what you start looking at online, because there are so many bits of advice out there, and on the whole they tend to be very complicated. They tend to often dry the skin out and inflame the skin. So my first bit of advice would be to be really, it sounds counterintuitive, but be very gentle with what you're putting on your sort of acne skin. So a very gentle wash, and you know, use a, you know, if you're going to use a moisturizer on the skin, you can use a lotion which will keep the skin nice and calm. Look for, again, intelligent skincare products which are going to maybe help the skin, so things that will have products in them which will reduce inflammation. So you're looking to reduce inflammation, to break down the comedones, maybe your salicylic acid, etc. You're not looking to strip the skin with a sort of bland sort of alcohol type product. And I think that it's important to differentiate what may be going on. So, for example, if your face is flushing, you're getting spots in the middle of your cheeks, you've got no blackheads or whiteheads, and it's worse than the sun, it might be rosacea. Yes. So don't start using harsh sort of acne products on a rosacea skin. So making sure we've got the right diagnosis, I think, is really, really important. And if you're not sure, then I would definitely seek advice.
Would you just name maybe two really great high street brands or chemist brands that you would recommend, and two creams as well?
So I love the Effaclar range by La Roche-Posay, and it's a very straightforward product which works well. I love things like Cetaphil Gentle Wash to sort of gently sort of wash the skin. The Ordinary Duo Salicylic sort of toner, which is quite good. So all of those products are good, sensible sort of high street products which you can use.
How long should you use those products before you say, oh, it's not working for me?
Okay, well, you need to give them the chance, really, I think. So I would say definitely a few weeks. You're getting into the right routine and sticking to it is probably a really good idea. But I think that, you know, if your skin is getting worse, you know, you've got big sort of acne lesions which are bothering you, etc., then getting advice sooner rather than later is a really good idea. Or if you're not sure, if you're using products for acne but it makes the skin feel worse, then maybe it's not acne, you know, maybe it is something like rosacea, etc. So that's quite important.
Should you squeeze a blackhead?
The danger of squeezing inflammatory skin lesions is you can cause more inflammation, you can exacerbate scarring. So that's not a great idea,
okay,
really.
So if you have blackheads?
If you've got blackheads, then I sometimes I think there are certain sort of masks which can help.
Does a clay mask help?
No, I worry about some clay masks. I think they're very drying, and I think that some masks kind of, not only do they take out this sort of oil from the skin, they take off the top layer of the skin, and suddenly you're left with this really dry, irritated skin and a damaged skin barrier.
If you have a big white spot desperate to be popped on your back,
then I'm not going to stop you, but just be aware that if it's really ready to go, etc., then a just gentle press may help it.
With tissue?
Wash your hands, absolutely.
Take the tissue.
So probably just make your hands clean and say, sort of have a cotton pad or something, make sure it's all sterile.
Do you put something on it afterwards?
You could put a sort of topical acne treatment on it afterwards, because that probably have quite good penetration, but I feel bad about advising people to squeeze spot, but the truth is you're going to do it, aren't you?
I think if you are going to squeeze a spot, I think we should be able to sort of at least advise you the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I've
We're
never
all grown
been
ups
able
here.
To stop...
Yeah.
anybody, including myself. I mean, I squeezed my way through my teens. So I loved squeezing spots and anybody else's I could get my hands on. But
yes, if you squeeze and nothing's coming out, then I would just sort of hold back and give it a couple of days, you know, let it go. If it's going to come easily, then yes, it probably is quite nice to sort of squeeze that spot. But just make sure you're doing it with clean hands and don't keep pressing if nothing's coming out, because you're probably driving inflammation sort of deeper and increasing your risk of scarring. So, yeah.
Thank you, Justine, for coming to see us.
Thank you so much for asking. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Guinea Pig provides unbiased information to those who may be considering cosmetic surgery or even trialling a non-invasive treatment or product. We do not endorse the use of any product or procedure featured in this podcast and are not responsible for the outcome of any of the treatments featured on this podcast or damage caused in connection with any treatments or products. Should you decide to try any of the procedures, treatments or products mentioned in any episode of The Guinea Pig, you do so at your own risk. Always consult an independent and fully qualified medical professional if you are considering embarking on a medical procedure, irrespective of whether it's an invasive or non-invasive procedure.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.